plans for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com. And joining me today, formerly of ForTheSword, now of The Athletic, which you can go subscribe to right now, it is David Zabok. David, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So obviously, we have things to dive into today. There are things with the Cavs that have happened. There have actually has been some news with this team in a way that I don't know if I was necessarily expecting to happen the way they presented it. We're going to talk about a bunch today, including the Cavs' three-point shooting. But the big thing is Dwayne Wade is now going to come off the bench for the Cavs. He apparently asked Tyronn Lue to go to that role, feeling it's best for him and the team. This comes on the heels of him saying he's struggling to fit in, kind of playing a new role for him, which makes a lot of sense. And J.R. Smith goes back to being in the starting lineup. Dave, what was your just initial reaction to Dwayne Wade and the Cavs saying, like, basically just saying, yes, this is the best role for him and this group, we're going to do this right now, after committing to him being the starter not more than a week ago?
I don't know that anybody was, for, you know, Dwayne Wade's a smart guy, right? So I don't know that anybody was super committed to Dwayne Wade as the starter in theory. I think everybody thought it had to happen, it had to start that way, who he is and what his career's been.
Yeah, especially from the outside looking in, I think a lot of us were saying he's probably going to want to start, and I think there was that assumption kind of when he got signed that, okay, like, is he going to accept the bench role? And then it seemed like that wasn't going to be the case.
Yeah, and I don't think there were a lot of people in the locker room either that felt really good about it, and that they all kept saying it, like, he said it before they, you know, made the adjustment. He said, I'm trying to find my role. I'm trying to figure out, you know, how this is going to work. And I think Ty Lue, you know, there was a piece where Ty Lue was basically saying, like, in that starting lineup, he might not even be the third option. And so I just think there was a lot of discomfort from everyone in terms of how Wade would actually look with that starting group. And, everybody in the locker room, you know, knows who Dwayne Wade is, and so that's why it sort of happened at the beginning of the year anyway. But I don't think anybody went in, even within that team, I don't think anybody went into the season saying, wow, we're really, you know, excited about Dwayne Wade to start. As my dog keeps getting this chew toy. But in a way, I'm surprised that it happened so quickly. I think it's to everyone's credit that the change is happening.
Yeah, I mean, there was the big Windhorse piece right away. I mean, just about how he was kind of disrupting things. I mean, just in as much as we as Cavs Twitter, and I shouldn't necessarily put you in this because I don't know if you've tweeted this, we're looking at Calderon as sort of the guy that pushed Richard Jefferson. I like his roster spot was Jefferson's. Like, there was no... The guy that really pushed everyone to somewhere else was Dwayne Wade. Wade coming in when he came in, not later in the year, not when the Cavs had maybe made some other moves or something. Like, him coming in at the point that he did was reason Richard Jefferson is really the reason Richard Jefferson is not on the team. And you can talk about, I think, how the Cavs approached their roster differently. If last year with David Griffin, they purposely kept a roster spot open. This year they went in with 15 and kind of had to make a move that was going to be uncomfortable either way. I think most people would have preferred to be Calderon, but you can understand logically why they probably just want to have that point guard depth while Isaiah is out and while they're playing Derrick Rose, who has this history of breaking down and is already hurt and is going to, you know, miss more games already than he's played to start the year, which is not a great sign. But Wade coming off the bench, I think, probably maybe makes it easier for him to acclimate. My thing with him is I think he can provide something to this team. He can provide shot creation. He can provide scoring. He can provide, I think, really useful lineups where he can be paired with other guys, I think Kevin Love in particular, and kind of keep things going on LeBron to the floor. I think the best use for him is not playing with LeBron. I think it's getting him to do things that Dwayne, he's still good at, and maximizing it in the right circumstances. I think when everyone's healthy, he's probably the fourth option on the team. If you look at Kevin Love, I think has to be number two. I think a healthy Isaiah Thomas is number two or number three, and not LeBron's obviously one. I think you put Wade at four, and I think if you start him, you're asking him to kind of fill roles that he's not equipped to in terms of shooting, in terms of defense. JR can do those things. JR's not perfect. JR, his shooting can be all over the place. His shooting was bad last year. His defense can be all over the place. But he has a better chance of offering that in that role alongside LeBron next to Derrick Rose, who's not a good shooter, better than Wade can. And I think if you can just get Wade doing things that he's comfortable doing to start off, that's probably a win too.
Yeah, I think there's two questions, right? And the first one is, you know, does he have anything left? And I'm not sure that we have a positive answer to that question yet. But if he does, then I think you're 100% right that, you know, if he still has something left in the tank, he can still facilitate, maybe do a little bit of cutting off ball. You know, I think there are second units, especially if they could, you know, find ways to have Wade and Love out on the court together where they could run some really fun offensive sets and, you know, you'd trust Wade to find him and all of that. I think, unfortunately, if he doesn't have enough left, then he becomes one of those players. And unfortunately, the Cavs might have just too many of these guys, but he becomes another player that really can't function unless he's out on the court with LeBron, which is sort of ironic because, you know, they spent so much time in Miami trying to figure out those two, you know, playing together and complementing one another. And I don't know that they ever found a perfect balance of it, but, you know, the story of the Cavs over the last few years is that they've sort of needed LeBron to stabilize lineups. And, you know, maybe Dwayne Wade 3 years ago, you know, could do that, you know, and give LeBron a chance to rest. I don't know if he's that good anymore, or if he could do that. But I think that's where we're at. And you're totally right about Derrick Rose, which is unfortunate because I think he played really well in those first two games, or at least, you know, well enough where he looked like he's quick enough off the dribble that he can at least put pressure on defenses and get them to react. So even though Rose isn't shooting the ball, he at least, you know, can bend defenses a little bit. And I just haven't seen that ability from Wade yet. And now he goes to the, you know, to a role that hopefully will be better for him. But I kind of want to see it first.
I do too, and I think JR's move and adjustment will be a lot simpler. I think you hit on a really important point about Rose, is that he's been good when he's able to do the few things he's still sort of good at. He's not Derrick Rose of old anymore. Like, everyone just kind of has to, I think, accept it. The role the Cavs outlined for him was driving and kicking and creating for others out of the pick and roll and in space, and Wade's not a guy that really helps you do that at this point. He's not. I mean, he hit that three the other night against the Magic. He can, I think, you know, probably hit corner threes decently enough where, like, at least he can shoot them and it'd not be a bad shot. But he's not going to be a knockdown shooter. And the tricky thing is like, how many shooters do the Cavs actually have? And, like, you have Korver, but you don't have Kyrie anymore to provide that spacing. I don't think Love's overall best use on this team is just as someone to shoot. Like, I don't think that's a particularly good use for Love because they need him to do other stuff. And I've really liked what they're doing with him on the elbow a little bit this year and something we haven't seen, and getting LeBron cutting off ball. And Shumpert's not a shooter. Jeff Green is not a particularly useful shooter. And Tristan Thompson obviously is not. And, like, you're not playing Channing Frye, so you're sort of lacking some of these things. Then you're finding this weird balance. Like, I think Isaiah, if he's healthy, is going to be a big addition for this team. Before we get deeper into this, a reminder to everyone that today's podcast is brought to you by the good folks over at SeatGeek. Now, if you don't know what SeatGeek is, it is a free app you can get on your iPhone, smartphone. You can go to their website, SeatGeek.com. You can buy tickets to anything you want to see. So if you want to see a Cavs game, and there's maybe not some of the best teams in the NBA coming up, but if you want to see Porzingis, if you want to see some of the other NBA's good young stars in the next few weeks, you can get tickets right on SeatGeek. You can see the view from your seat right in the app. You can compare seats from all across the arena. You know if you're getting a good deal or a bad deal based on how they score the tickets. If it's green, it's good. If it's red, it's bad. And you're not going to have any hidden fees or any problems with SeatGeek. I use SeatGeek all the time. I just used it to get Indian tickets for the playoffs so I could actually go see them before they flamed out. And inevitably, I'm going to use it to see a concert again. I use it to get Cuddy tickets, and at some point, I'll probably use it to get Cavs tickets too on a night where I'm not covering the team. But download that app today. Use the promo code LOMBA and save $20 on your first purchase. That's promo code LOMBA. So, David, you wrote about the Cavs' three-point shooting for The Athletic in your first piece over there. Listeners, you can find that piece in the show notes. So if you haven't read that already, and you should subscribe to The Athletic while you do that as well. But one of the things I think we maybe as a collective group on Cavs Twitter maybe haven't talked about enough is that the Cavs' roster, and you hit on this, the Cavs' roster is just different. Kyle Korver last year was a luxury when they got him, right? Like, Kyrie provided the spacing, and JR, you know, was playing a lot of minutes, and RJ was, you know, could shoot threes, and Channing Frye was playing. Kyle Korver is now sort of the one really good shooter coming off the bench. Shumpert, again, is not. All these other guys are just not shooting, and I think, like, you can make that work. But I think it's a big identity adjustment for this group, and it's an identity adjustment for LeBron in a way that you think good LeBron teams come with a lot of shooting. And when you don't have that sort of built in, I think it just is an adjustment, especially when you're adding a big personality in a ball player like Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've written two pieces for The Athletic, and both of them were sort of prefaced on this idea that Dwayne Wade made things sort of difficult. But now that they replace him with J.R. Smith, I think it solves a lot of their problems. You're right. They don't have the amount of shooters that they did a year ago, losing Kyrie hurts in a big way. We've seen mixed things from Kyle Korver in terms of how useful he can be. It's kind of like Channing Frye was a year ago, where Frye was still making a high percentage of shots, but the defense has kind of gotten to a point where he better be making them or else it gets really difficult to play him. And I think we've seen Korver, you know, have a night where, you know, he was making everything. And of course you have to be playing Kyle Korver, but then I think we have a couple nights where he hasn't been able to get it going, and then it becomes sort of and it's unfair to do it that way, and you play the percentages and all that, but the lack of defense makes it hard. But I do think you add J.R. Smith into the starting lineup. You already have Kevin Love and Jay Crowder there. LeBron James is a good enough or, you know, competent three-point shooter at this point in his career. Particularly, like you said, when Isaiah Thomas comes back or when Derrick Rose is creating off the dribble, I actually think there's, you know, a really good amount of spacing there, and I think they're going to score a ton of points. You would, I think, you know, like to see them maybe balance it out, you know, a little bit more. But, you know, it's not, you know, hockey-style lineups where all of the shooters will come off the floor and all of the non-shooters will be back in. And, you know, that's why I'd like to see some Dwayne Wade, Kevin Love lineups. I'd like to see, LeBron, JR, Korver, Tristan lineups, you know, where, you know, and I think that's where, you know, Jay Crowder, I was somebody who, I'm sort of an Isaiah Thomas skeptic, and I was kind of one of the few skeptics on what the Cavs actually got back in that trade, but I mean, I think we all love what we see from Jay Crowder so far, and you know, he just allows for a lot of lineup flexibility. So, you know, I think the Cavs with their starting lineup are giving up a lot defensively and maybe even rebounding wise, but just putting J.R. Smith into the starting lineup, I think, does a lot to help some of those spacing issues.
Crowder's shooting is going to be vitally important for what they're going to do, because if he's hitting threes, particularly in the corner, and particularly just when things collapse around LeBron, that'll go a long way to kind of solving some of the things. Because, like, again, I don't think you want to use Kevin Love just in the one way as a shooter. I don't think you want to have LeBron. Like, if you're banking on LeBron to create space, like, that's just a weird use of LeBron. And yes, like the LeBron dribble, because they didn't come out rush out to defend him three-pointer against the Bucks, is one of my three favorite moments of the season, because he was just trolling them as he was kind of taking over that game late. But there are just like little things where you can't create enough spacing. I think the key to all this ends up being Tyronn Lue. I think you have to hope he pairs does the right lineups and creates the right lineups where he's not playing. Like, Wade and Rose probably should not overlap. Like, that was part of one of the issues with the starting lineup. And Shumpert and Wade and Rose, like, should never be on the floor together. And two of those guys, like, honestly, any combination of those two maybe shouldn't share the floor. And so that means JR, you know, has to probably play in these right lineups. And Korver is going to have to, I think, like, be a big part of bench units with LeBron. I think Korver, out of anyone, like, should just have his minutes matched with LeBron. I think, like, he's most maximized when he's just going to be playing with LeBron. And, you know, Wade, like you said, Wade has to kind of maybe be paired with Love, and maybe want to sneak one other shooter on the floor. And maybe in certain games, you need to dust off Fry depending on how things go. And Isaiah presents all these other questions, because if Wade's coming off the bench and you're not going to bring Isaiah off the bench, I would imagine, you know, Rose and Wade would have to be staggered pretty interestingly there. How does that sort of ego battle handle itself? These are complicated questions that we're not going to really get resolutions to for months, which isn't particularly a fun concept to kind of think about. But maybe a lot of this does, at least in my mind, come down to, okay, how does Ty Lue manage this, and who is he playing with who, and how is he – what is he valuing in lineups? Is he valuing spacing? Is he valuing guys he thinks can defend? Who does he trust? Like, does he trust Amon Shumpert's going to hit threes and not take bad shots within the context of all? There's questions that I think we'll probably get some answers to, but there's also some stuff I just kind of feel like we know we're getting out of Amon Shumpert. You know, like, we're not going to get anything revolutionary out of him. Like, we know what you're going to get. And I think there has to be some of that with Lou sort of knowing what is going to work and what also is going to maximize LeBron and what is going to maximize Kevin Love, because it at least does seem like they are going to use Love differently in moments this year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but I sort of think that makes things more fun, right? Because
it definitely does.
I think you know probably more than anybody how mentally checked out I was for long stretches last year. Mainly because the team was, you know, I mean, I was kind of discussing the team last year with somebody, and I had to, like, a lot of it had to be, like, jogged back into my memory. Like, this notion, I had to re-remember how good Tristan Thompson was defensively, and then how, like, after the All-Star break, like, he just didn't, I mean, I don't know if he was just dead or hurt or all of the above. You know, I looked at their net rating from last year, and it was just, like, exceedingly average, right? So, I mean, it was a, like, really frustrating team last year, because it was very clear that they did not care, because they knew, and I'm not really even ripping on them. They knew that they would be judged on the finals and the finals alone, right? And you're exactly right. This year's different in terms of we don't have answers to any of these questions, right? So, you know, leading up to winning the title, there were all these questions. Can Kyrie be good enough? Can Tristan be good enough? What happens to Kevin Love when he has to guard the pick and roll, blah, blah, blah. And we got, like, positive answers to all of those questions. And then we spent all of last year basically being like, you know, well, the Warriors got better. We stayed the same. We'll see if it's enough. And, you know, whether it was bad habits or whether the Warriors were just better than the Cavs were, you didn't get a good answer to the question. But the regular season last year was largely a waiting game, right? And you know, we had Richard Jefferson, dunking on Klay Thompson. And, you know, we get to watch LeBron James play, you know, all the time. But this year, the way you laid it out, you know, how they try and mix and match these players, you know, will have a huge say and sort of how good they are on a nightly basis, and how good LeBron is defensively in terms of what numbers he wants to put up in the regular season. That'll have a big impact as well.
Well, you're right about last year's Cavs being something that the regular season version and really the playoff version now, because of the roster overhaul, it's really hard to put into any sort of context of this year, I think. I think, like, LeBron in the regular season was coasting, and, you know, Kyrie's presence being there last year and then not being here this year in itself is a very different thing, and I haven't been, to a game yet, and I know you haven't either, but, like, there's just a different sort of, like, energy around just the team, too, in a way that I think just feels more energetic, and I don't know exactly what that translates to in the regular season, and what stylistic things we'll see, because I do think you are going to see Lou have to tinker and choose to tinker. I mean, I think the Wade adjustment is proof of that, and I think just kind of finding roles for these new guys that he hasn't coached before is going to be part of that. It's a different roster, and I think that certainly will lead to just questions. And I do think the only thing that I really feel like we can take away from last year is that they're probably still going to be bad on defense, and it's for some of the same reasons, but you're at least going to, I think, see, like, Crowder means you have at least, like, a guy you can have put on the other team's best player. JR back in the starting lineup will help, you know, I think, and maybe LeBron's playing free safety, and Kevin Love's been, I think, okay defensively. I think the only time he's been really bad is when Jose Calderon played the first 5 minutes of the Magic game, and they got abused in the pick and roll because Jose Calderon is bad. But there's these little things we just don't know, and that's interesting in itself. What have you liked out of the first week? What about the first week to you has been a positive from the win against Milwaukee, the win against Boston, which is a game I have almost no desire to, like, analyze, because I just everything about that game was weird, and then the loss to the Magic, which in itself was another extreme weird.
Well, I mean, I think you can look at two things. I think, you know, benching Dwayne Wade, I don't know if that's a fun thing to like the most, but I think just in terms of impact on the court, I think it'll be the most productive thing. I think they were the starters in the two games that they had won were outscored by like 21 points per 100 possessions when they had played. And, you know, for most people, I think, as we talked about, were sort of skeptical that starting lineup would work. But there were a few, you know, people on Twitter and elsewhere that, you know, defended it and said, you know, they'd work it out. And you couldn't really take a victory lap on those guys today, because the second part of what they always said was, and if it doesn't work, they'll just change it. And I was a little worried that, you know, because of Dwayne Wade's, reputation and what he's done in his career, it would be difficult for Ty Lue to just change the starting lineup. And I think, you know, the fact that they've been able to do it after just three games is really, you know, I think, good to see. In terms of actually what you've seen in the games, I mean, that win in Milwaukee was really impressive. I think Milwaukee really wanted that game. I thought Milwaukee played with a lot of energy. But the Cavs moved the ball incredibly well. I don't really like how I've written extensively about it. You know, people sort of equate ball movement with, like, success, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. But the ball was moving with purpose, and it was getting to the right players at the right moments, and the Cavs just played a really good game, and LeBron was super motivated and focused, which he always seems to be against Milwaukee. But I thought that showed that, you know, last year's regular season wasn't that great, but I think this team does still have a really high ceiling, and maybe I'm just a pessimist, but it was good for me to see that, especially so early in the year, because you expect some growing pains as they integrate new faces and all that.
Growing pains, I think, are a big part of it. I think the Milwaukee win was, I mean, for obvious reasons, because it was their best, it was A, their best win, and B, the Celtics game, again, just the Hayward injury just kind of throws a wrinkle in everything, and the Kyrie stuff was just obviously going to be the narrative of that night. I think they handled the Bucks' like length and Giannis's outburst better than I kind of expected they would at this point in the year. I think you just saw what Kevin Love was doing against Chris Middleton and posting him up and kind of dominating a matchup against a smaller but yet kind of strong wing type player was a really encouraging sign. I think they went at Thon Maker and or Thon Maker and kind of dominated him, and I think they attacked the Bucks' guards in a way that made sense, and I think they did everything right. And you have to live with Giannis, just kind of be doing Giannis things. Like Crowder hit open threes in that game, and he didn't. You know, you can't contain Giannis. LeBron couldn't contain Giannis, but you can got through a lot of that, and that in itself just is a good sign. And you could tell the Cavs were up for that game later on. You could tell that at least like they were not going to just kind of lay down and kind of let a game like that go. And I think they're going to, a year ago, it wouldn't have shocked me if the Cavs kind of went into this game earlier in the year, first half back-to-back game you're not considering, and then went out to make a statement. And coincidentally, maybe it's the Bucks, because last year the Bucks were a team that fired them up, that really came at them hard and got them going earlier in the year. So maybe it was just kind of a carryover of that. But I think there was something there that they just kind of wanted to win that game. And I liked in that game, too, how they used Korver. I don't know exactly what caused Lou to do it. I think some of it had to just be there was one play that worked. But they did just a lot of little stuff to get him open on screens. You saw him flaring out to the wings. You saw him coming around screens more like he did with the Hawks and used in a way that they didn't really use him last year. And I sort of like that as its own little thing when he's on the floor. It can't be a huge part of your offense. You probably should not run plays for him like maybe the Hawks did when he was at his peak in that 60-win team. But a couple times a game, if you have him coming around screens with LeBron James being the one pulling the strings and deciding where he's going to get the ball and getting him the ball at all, like that's effective offense when you need spacing. And when you do that, you could see the Bucks have to kind of start marking Korver, face guarding him, and that creates opportunities for other guys, for Derrick Rose, for LeBron James, for guys that need to attack off the dribble. I like that Lou did something that, I mean, he really never did last year because they just didn't really have to have Korver do anything other than stand there and wait to get an open pass when LeBron or Kyrie attack the rim.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen in the playoffs different teams guard Korver differently, and Korver was getting like face guarded from the minute he came on the court against Milwaukee, and the first three he made was from like 27 feet, and a guy had his hand in his face, and it's like, you don't even have to run plays for him. He's helping you either way at that point. And, you know, I understand it because he was horrific in, you know, the opening night game win. We played 7 minutes. He didn't get a shot off.
Got posted by Marcus Smart twice.
Yeah, right? I mean, it was bad. And there were a couple times that Tristan Thompson should have came over and helped him, but he didn't get the help. But you know, people are, you know, at the beginning of the Milwaukee game, Korver checks in and everybody's mad. And then like 2 minutes go by and Korver hasn't taken a three and everybody's mad. But in the meantime, the Cavs are getting these, you know, off ball cuts for easy layups. Derrick Rose is putting in, you know, layups off passes from LeBron. It's like, meanwhile, Kyle Korver's, you know, off, you know, like I said, 25, 27 feet away from the basket, but you know, they're all up on him. So, you know, anytime you have LeBron James on the floor and you can turn it into a 4-on-4 game instead of a 5-on-5 game, you know, that's just so helpful. And if teams are going to play Korver like that, it makes it a lot easier to play him. And you're right, they did run some sets for him and run him off some screens. And I do think particularly now that more shooting is going into the starting lineup and away from, you know, the bench, they really will have to get creative in how they use Korver, because you described it pretty well earlier that the bench does not have the amount of shooters that, you know, we had seen in the past.
Was there anything in your mind that stood out as an outright negative? We've hit on Wade, which I think in its own right probably the biggest frustrating point of the week, but is there anything else to you that stood out as a bad sort of start for the Cavs on any front?
I mean, I don't know. They're just old. And
yeah,
you know,
it's not great.
It's like people get so mad if you say negative things about Jeff Green. It's like, in the year 2017, how are you going to bat for Jeff Green?
You went exactly where I was going to go, because Jeff Green against the Magic in a game where they were still only down by 10 or something like that, Tyronn Lue ran a play for Jeff Green at the elbow.
Yeah.
It's not useful.
In the first game, he had 8 shots in 14 minutes. It's like, what?
Yeah.
And, you know, if he's not going to hit threes, kind of like what you said about Jake Crowder in terms of, you know, whether he makes shots is a huge part of his value, and that's true. With Jeff Green, it's like the dividing line between, you know, playable and unplayable. And, you know, he's played pretty hard defensively. I don't mean to pick on him, but, you know, you're playing him. You're playing Derrick Rose. You're playing Dwayne Wade. You're not playing, you know, Chetty Osman. You're not playing Zizic. And, you know, that's probably fine. I have no idea if Osman's ready to play real NBA minutes. He's probably not. But, you know, you look at the Spurs, you look at the Warriors, those are teams that go out and they figure out what they have. And more often than not, they don't have much. You know, whether it's Briante Weber or Kevin Looney or, you know, any of these young guys that, you know, for a week and a half is the Warriors' next, you know, all-star or whatever, but, you know, ultimately doesn't end up being that good. But at least they're going out there and trying to give these guys opportunities. We don't do that in Cleveland, and, you know, it's great that we love the Canton Charge and all that, but I'd love to see what these guys could do on the court. So why Jeff Green gets minutes over, you know, Chetty Osman, in the playoffs, I would get it. I don't know if I get it in the regular season.
The read rates on Canton Charge articles tell me is what I need to know about the Canton Charge. But, like, I mean, I think you're right. The Warriors, they have guys like Looney and McAdoo that get overplayed and become a problem. And like, there's a line there for sure. But when you open yourself up to the idea that a young guy can play, you end up maybe getting a Patrick McCaw. You maybe get a Jordan Bell, who's been, like, certainly overhyped, but has been kind of doing really interesting things. And in San Antonio, you get Jontae Murray. You get someone who is, adequately replacing Tony Parker to start the year and legitimately looks like a NBA rotation player. And, like, I don't think, as much as I think Kay Felder was very good in the G League last year, I don't know if playing him was going to turn him into a quality backup point guard. Like, maybe he's better than Calderon, but that's not really saying very much, you know? Like, that's just an issue in itself. But, like, Jeff Green is what he is. Like, I mean, he's coming off the worst three-point shooting year of his career. I mean, he's in Orlando, so that's certainly worth noting that he's playing on a pretty bad team with limited spacing, and shot 27.5% from three and 2.8 attempts per game. He isn't a good defender, and Lou believes in him. I think that's worth noting, that if you listen to what Tyronn Lue had to say about him leading up to the year, this was someone that he coached in Boston. This is someone that he knows and trusts and kind of believes in. And I think one of the things with Lue is that he does kind of lean on guys that he trusts, and he does lean on things that he sort of knows. It's one of the Doc Rivers influences on him, I think, at least. And I think, like, they think Jeff Green can be this thing, and I think they believe that he can be maximized in the way Derek Williams was. The question is, at least, like, for as much as I got annoyed talking about Derek Williams last year, like, he could cut and he could get to the rim and do these things. Jeff Green's not really doing that. He's just kind of floating around the 3-point line. He had that really good dunk in the preseason, but he's not hitting threes, and he shouldn't be having sets run for him. Like, no matter who he's on the floor with, I just don't think Jeff Green from the left elbow is a good offensive possession. Like, there's just no way that's actually going to be something that turns into value. And I agree with you. I don't know if Osman's ready to contribute. I would sort of just rather find out, at least right now, than having Jeff Green play 17 minutes and 8.
Yeah, and I, you know, that at the end of the day, playing Jeff Green is not a huge issue, and it's not worth, you know, getting worked up about. But I just think it's not just Jeff Green. It's, you know, the place for Dwayne Wade. It's the place for Derrick Rose. Channing Frye is still on the roster. And, it just seems like, you know, and I'm not, and frankly, I'm not, you didn't hear me say very many times last year, why isn't Kay Felder playing? I didn't believe in Kay Felder. I don't really have a whole lot of affinity for guards under 6 feet tall, but, and that extends to other Cavaliers, but
certain ones that wear number three that have hip injuries.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see, but, you know, obviously it has to be a real prospect if I feel like you really need to be playing. And I think Osman is one. And I think Zizic is a former first round pick that people have said nice things about. So, eventually I'd like to see these guys, you know, get shots. But injuries happen and people, you know, they'll be able to probably get some time in Canton and we'll see what they have.
Yeah, John Holland, Osman, Kendrick Perkins, and Zizic lineup should be really, really good in Canton, with London Perantes running point, who's the two-way guy they signed. Last thing, David, Derrick Rose out Tuesday, out Wednesday. Doesn't look like his injury super serious, but it's now going to just be already missed games for him. Any concern over Rose so far early in the season, whether it's injuries or whether it's his play?
I was mildly optimistic coming into the year. When I wrote that last piece for Fear of the Sword about how I didn't think the starting lineup made a whole lot of sense. I was actually sort of pleasantly surprised to see Rose's stats from last year. He had a league average true shooting rate. I like what I've seen. I think he's quicker. You know, he's still got that quickness. I think when he plays with LeBron, you know, soaks up a lot of attention. And I think, you know, you've seen him be able to finish at the rim a little bit. He's had some wild drives. He's going to do that. But when he drives, it at least, and I know I'm sort of a broken record, but defenses have to react to that. And I think, you know, when you put him next to J.R. Smith and Crowder and Love, and then you have, you know, a world-class creator like LeBron, I'm actually pretty optimistic about what it might look like. Now, is he Kyrie Irving? No. Is he Isaiah Thomas? No. But, you know, I think there is a real role for him, and he's got to stay healthy, like you said. I don't know how serious this is or what, but I think he has a chance to be helpful. Aside from any feelings I have about him as a human being or whatever, but I'm actually fairly optimistic about it.
He's already in the top five weirdest interviews I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah, because just the way he, if you go back and watch his Media Day interview, just like the way he still talks about what he is and how he views things was just very bizarre to me. Just very a guy who still thinks he's like an MVP. And that's like a really, really odd thing to consider. Like Wade, I think, is openly sort of dealing with the idea that he's not number two option anymore. Like he's, you know, not, like it's not like the Heat where LeBron moved on and he just kind of took over the mantle again. It's not like Chicago where it was the three alphas. Like he's, Kevin Love is already here and LeBron James is here and Isaiah Thomas will be back and all these things. And it's different. And I think Rose is just like, I want to be the guy. And I think you are, I think he has been like good. And when he is driving and attacking the rim and when he is kicking out to others and he's being explosive, he looks really good. But the moment he has an ankle injury, I get a little squeamish because Derrick Rose and ankle injuries and lower body injuries are just like, if those start adding up, you're going to just get immediately diminishing returns in a guy who's only played 60 games a year anyway. And you're getting into some interesting territory. But he's one of the most interesting things because like if he breaks down and Isaiah is not healthy, what do the Cavs have at point guard? You have Jose Calderon. And you have London Perantes on for 45 days. So like, what do you do to compensate there? Like that's not worth diving into now because it's so many hypotheticals. But it's a situation where it could be January and Rose is banged up and Isaiah is not healthy. And you're basically going to probably have to play Dwayne Wade at point guard a bunch. And that's going to be a change too.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, hopefully Isaiah Thomas is back and is healthy and can play. But, you know, it's kind of worth mentioning. It doesn't really seem like, you know, Mr. Gilbert is as interested in spending as, you know, money like he used to. So I'm curious to see. I think they're going to roll with the point guard position as is. They can, you know, they can play Wade there if they need to. They can play LeBron there if they need to. But no, it's not ideal.
Basically, don't expect an Eric Bledsoe trade. Just don't expect the Cavs to flip something for Eric Bledsoe. He's probably getting moved. If you listen to this, he may have been moved already. But like, just based on what we've read about the situation, but Cleveland's not a landing spot for him. But David, as always, thanks for coming on. You can find David on Twitter at David Zabok, and you can read his pieces, one about three-point shooting, one about the Cavs' defense, both at The Athletic, and you can find them in the show notes of this podcast. Dave, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, always happy to do it. Talk to you soon.
What you doing?
Ran out of space on my phone, so I'm deleting some stuff. Bye, singing dog. Bye, goal.
I pronounce you.
Bye, wedding ceremony.
Stop. At Metro PCS, you get two free phones with twice as much memory.
Really?
Don't say bye to your memories. Switch to Metro PCS and get two free LG K20 Plus phones with 32 gigs when you switch two lines. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.